The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. I know a place where we can go to lay the troubles down, eating your soul. I know a place where mercy flows, take the stains, make it whiter than snow. Like a tide, it is rising up deep inside a current that moves and makes you come alive. Living water that brings the dead to life.
This is Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
We're going down to the river, down to the river, down to the river to pray.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program Crosswalk with Gino Geraci. Joining me is Dr. Jim Dennison. He's the author, founder, director of the Dennison Forum, and you can find everything you need to know about Dr. Jim Dennison at the Dennison Forum. You can go to DennisonForum.org. And Jim, when we first talked a little bit about having you on, I did, and it's only fair that we actually talk about what we asked you to talk about, I guess, and that's about Santa Claus. And when we, I do want to talk a little bit about Santa Claus, talk about the resources that you have available, but I'm chomping at the bit to talk about the Daily Article today. But let's talk first about Santa Claus.
Hard to have a more disparate conversation than that, isn't it?
Yeah.
About Santa Claus biblically and then the election on the other side.
Right. But you know what? What's funny to me, I heard in the news today that a young man had went to a woke Santa in all places, Texas. And he asked for a gun, not a real gun, yes. A Nerf gun.
Yes. A Nerf gun, yes.
Yeah, and the woke Santa said, you can ask for it from your parents, but I'm not going to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a whole lot of pushback. But this sort of begs the question about the historical Santa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of
and where are we with all of this, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the history behind that very quickly. Folks have asked me this over the years as a pastor and as a philosopher and a theologian. And so I thought, well, I'll just put some resources together that might be helpful toward that question. So on a historical level, we're talking about a fellow named Nicholas who was born around AD 280 in what we call Turkey. It was in that day Asia Minor. He became a very well-known minister. He became eventually a saint of the church, really cared about children. He would provide gifts for them, oftentimes on their doorsteps or even at their fireplaces. He wore a red and white robe, of all things, and over the centuries became a venerated saint. So the Danish especially appreciated him. They called him Saint Nicholas in their language, which in anglicized becomes Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Then you fast forward to 1822, Clement Clark Moore, who wrote the wonderful poem, The Night Before Christmas, that got illustrated, and that's where a lot of the contemporary ideas of Santa Claus come from, is that poem of 1822. But it's built on a historical figure, Saint Nicholas, 3rd and 4th century in what we call Turkey today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a fascinating guy. And the story, at least tradition, of how he became the Bishop of Myra is fascinating in and of itself. But and again, the story of the merchant whose daughters wanted to be married but couldn't because they had an insufficient dowry. And he was one of those people coming fresh off of the second century hermitage, desert fathers, really did take a vow of poverty and found creative ways to give.
Great stories. And stories of grace, essentially. The idea of helping those that can't help themselves. a little different than the contemporary Santa Claus that only gives to those that are good, you know, really not the gospel of grace so much as the original Santa Claus, St. Nicholas was. And that's what I think is a way children can teach that story to their parents, to their children. When yes. they wonder, what do I do with the secular Santa Claus and all the how secularized, commercialized Christmas is, I think is to tell the original story. And then as the paper talks about, get into some of the other traditions that have such Christian significance, like the wreath that was a victory wreath, talk about the candle that was the light of the world, the Lord Jesus, even the Christmas tree, which was Martin Luther's idea that takes us back to the cross of Calvary, and so many of our traditions that can be used to teach biblical theology.
Now, if people want to get some of your resources on this, do they go to DennisInForum.org? Where's the best place to go?
That's exactly right. Thanks. They can go there, and this paper will pop up at the top of the website when they go to DennisInForum.org. They can also go to our resource tab on the website. They'll see a whole host of papers around what does the Bible say about. This is the top one there, but then you'll see one, what does the Bible say about cancel culture or racism, a whole variety of issues that are there.
Yeah, and obviously I had no idea when I asked you to come on that Texas, it's my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear Texas's concern about inappropriate voting. You have posted today at the Denison Forum this title, "How Should You Respond If You Consider the Election to Be Illegitimate? Four Options and a Biblical Path Forward." In your article, you basically say, not that I'm not a prophet or the son of a prophet. You say I'm not a lawyer or a lawmaker. You say that you have no expertise to offer on the issue. But let me just ask you kind of bluntly, what would you be willing to accept as evidence that something has, in fact, gone horribly and terribly wrong in this election? If, in fact, what some people are saying, that there was, in fact, grievous election impropriety?
It's a great question. And it's an issue that all Americans should be asking, regardless of their party affiliation, right, regardless of who you voted for or wanted to see elected. If at the end of the day we cannot trust our electoral system, then our democracy is on some level in jeopardy and in question. If we don't believe the president was elected legitimately, it's difficult to follow his leadership, his cabinet, all of that. So it's really an issue that all Americans should on some level be concerned about. In my thinking, anyway, it comes to two different levels, two different questions. The most practical question ahead of us, because of the Electoral College that's meeting next Monday, as you know, Safe Harbor's sure. already passed, all of that, would be, can we get a sense that these issues rise to such a level that they would actually overturn the election? In other words, are so many votes in question in so many swing states that at the end of the day, the Electoral College would be different? That creates an urgency if that's the case. If we believe that's not the case, and apparently Attorney General Barr does not believe that's the case, others don't think there's so many votes in question that it would actually change the election, then you come to a second place, which is, okay, let's take our time. Let's look at this, the whole gamut of it, before the next election. Let's talk about mail-in ballots. Let's talk about provisional ballots. Let's talk about absentee ballots. Let's talk about comparing signatures. Let's talk about the means by which supervision occurs in all of this and the whole host of issues that are being raised inside all of this, but that may not rise to the level that would actually numerically change the outcome of the election. To me, those are the two ways to look at it.
Yeah, this is very, very interesting because you cite the Reuters article or the opinion poll that 52% of Republicans believe President Trump rightfully won the election. 68% said they were concerned that the election was rigged. It's interesting to me in these opinion polls, that word, believe, I believe, it isn't based on the evidence or the lack thereof, or what would you cite as irrefutable evidence that this has in fact happened?
That's correct. And that's really at the end of the day what needs to happen here. What we're hearing, I think, to this point, and why so many people remain unconvinced that this is in fact a legitimate election, is the people that are assuring us this hasn't happened are people who have a vested personal interest in it not happening. These are election officials themselves who are telling us that they did a good job, essentially. And obviously, whenever anybody on any subject is the only means of providing their own accountability, it's easier to come along and question the outcome. So what at some point needs to happen is somebody that's more objective, not even somebody who's necessarily for Trump or for Biden, needs to come along in a process of review. I'll be shocked I'll be extremely disappointed if we don't, as a long-term consequence of this, have an objective, neutral system by which we look at how we elect people today. It's such a different day than it was when, obviously, the founders created this democracy of the Electoral College, everything else that we're a part of today. We need to give it a fresh look.
My guest is Dr. Jim Dennison. You can find out more at DennisonForum.org. Go to DennisonForum.org. Read the daily article for yourself, or do what I do. Log on, subscribe, get it delivered to your inbox every single day, or at least Monday through Friday. This is Gino Geraci. I'll be right back.
Highways continue to heavy up this afternoon. There's no accidents, but construction. Westbound 76 at I-25, backing up the drive. Santa Fe, heavy traffic, roadwork southbound Santa Fe down at Dartmouth. And a bad crash, police chase, ended 136th and Huron. I'm Susan Thielen.
This report is sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance, where you only pay for what you need.
Remember, customize and save with Liberty Mutual Insurance Company. Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
94.7 FM, The Word.
And now, your Pathway Minute with Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Jesus said, our use of money is a test of our faithfulness to God. Look at verse 10. He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is also unrighteous in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous mammon, who will give to you true riches? What is he talking about here? Jesus said, money is a very little thing to God. But here is where a little thing becomes a big thing. Money is a big thing in this sense. It is a barometer. It is a test of our faithfulness to God.
Pathway Minute is produced by Pathway to Victory. To access the Bible teaching of Dr. Robert Jeffress, go to ptv.org.
94.7 FM, The Word, is helping you survive the holidays with our grab-and-go dining directory. Treat yourself to a great meal from one of the area's finest restaurants. Just go to 94.7FMTheWord.com to view our list of fabulous local eateries that are open and ready to serve great takeout or delicious delivery. The grab-and-go dining directory. Less stress, more yum. Find it online at 94.7FMTheWord.com. And don't forget to show your appreciation this holiday season with a generous tip for the workers who are going above and beyond to serve you. Thanks.
We're here at the Colorado Money Matters Education Desk, along with Colorado's wealth coach and author, Wally Darling. You talk to people about retirement, and I've heard you say on the shows to plan for the worst case scenario. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, am I a negative guy?
Never.
Okay, well, I'm pretty positive. But when we do plans at my firm, because I don't ever want to have a complaint from anybody, and by the way, we've never had one in all these years, we are a fiduciary planning firm. But I like to show folks the worst case scenario in the plans we offer. It's a lot easier to plan when you know the worst. Most people will show you the best case scenario, and that never happens. Let's show you the worst case scenario, and that probably won't happen either, but let's hope for the best. And isn't that a lot better, more positive than showing you the best case and having it never work out?
I like that idea.
So let's do the worst case scenario planning and put it together for your very own plan for the next 10 callers. That's $1,000 value. I'm going to waive that fee, and we're going to show you a worst case scenario for your retirement plan.
Call 833-650-7526. That's 833-650-7526.
The Master's Apprentice is a faith-based program that provides urban young adults a bridge to the skilled trades through basic training, hands-on experience, and the creation of a career path leading to financial independence. As a nonprofit, they rely heavily on the kindness of their volunteer coaches to help them teach the next generation. They're looking for retired volunteers to help coach these valuable life skills classes for just 90 minutes a day, 2 days per week for 6 weeks, starting January 11th. Make a difference today in young men's lives by sharing your life's experience. Please visit themastersapprentice.org or 710knus.com today to learn more.
Hey, this is Pastor Ed from Calvary Church in Aurora, and I want to encourage you to take a minute and get the free Calvary Church app. On it, you'll find our live stream services, weekly messages, the Lead to Serve podcast, ways to connect with us, and information about our church, plus so much more. Just go to your app store and search Ed Taylor or Calvary Church, download it, turn on notifications, and we'd love to stay connected with you. Get the free Calvary Church app today.
This is Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
Peace be still, say the word.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. It's one of the great privileges over these last several months, particularly during the coronavirus, that Dr. Jim Dennison, has agreed to be a guest on the program a little bit more. I love having him on. You should go to thedennisonforum.org, subscribe like I do. You will be, to use his words, well, to use my words, I might as well. The Bible says, let another man's lips speak well of you. Inspired, challenged, and encouraged. So having said that, Dr. Jim Dennison, thanks again for being here.
Gino, so glad to be on. It's one of my favorite things to do. Really grateful.
Well, we're talking, you know, we talked a little bit about Santa Claus and how you can get the resources at Dennison Forum. But on today's today's article that you have in your daily article, you talk about how should you respond if you consider the election to be illegitimate. And you offer four logical options. One, seek to have the election overturned, which seems to be what several people are doing right at this very moment. Mm-hmm. Number two, seek to have President Biden removed from office. Nobody seems to be doing that because he isn't in office just yet.
Right.
Number three,
exactly.
Stop contesting the election, but oppose President Biden's agenda. Now, again, the opposition to that, he is fairly, dare I say it, he's told us what his agenda is.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come to the fourth one, but just sort of give us an idea of what you had in mind, at least with those three logical options thus far.
You bet. And they're almost chronological in a sense. Right now, as you say, the effort is to overturn the election. If that's not successful, then the next option, once he takes office on January the 20th, is either to seek impeachment or the 25th Amendment. And if one wishes not to do that, but one believes that he is ineligible, he is on some level illegally or immorally in office, then the position would be to oppose him in every way you could, in almost a cancel culture kind of approach. One way to illustrate that, Gino, and I'm sorry to say this, and I hope this doesn't sound too partisan in saying that, when President Trump was elected in 2016, there was a segment of the public and a segment of the media that adopted exactly that strategy, that took the position of what they called the resistance, who would say things like, he's not my president, who would make positions in the media that our job is to get him out of office, whether that's through impeachment, and there were some that were arguing he should be impeached even before he took office, or others that were at this position that said he is not a legitimate president, and therefore I'm going to do everything I can to oppose his agenda. We saw that in 2016. You saw it with the Russia collusion agenda, quite frankly. We've seen it across the years. And so what I'm suggesting is just on a logical level, I'm not arguing for this, mm-hmm. but on a logical level, there may be and probably will be some who will take that same approach relative to a President Biden if he comes into office in January. Read a columnist recently who made that very argument, who said, look, this is what you did 4 years ago, so this is what we're going to do now. I don't know that that's the best approach to take going forward in terms of the benefit of the country, but I do think on a logical level we may see some people doing that.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the passage, bless those who curse you, pray for those who despitefully use you, which brings me mm-hmm. to the fourth option that you present, support President Biden where we can do so biblically. You quote my friend Franklin Graham, and mm-hmm. who recently said in an interview, if Joe Biden is the president, if that's what it turns out to be, then we need to do everything we can to support him where we can. Now, I can hear Franklin's voice saying that. That sounds like something Franklin would say.
But that, again, could be a position that more and more people, I think, will take. Robert Jeffress, a friend of mine here in Dallas,
yeah.
who, of course, has been a very strong Trump supporter, has taken essentially the same position as I quoted him toward the end of the article. If he succeeds, America succeeds. And taking the position to try to rise above perhaps some of what was done 4 years ago.
Well, again, if you take seriously, and I really do take seriously, that when a person places their hand on the Bible, raises their right hand, and swears to support and defend the Constitution, so help them God, I'm hoping every single person who takes that oath of office really means it.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect, Jim Dennison, it's okay for the American people to say, you took an oath. I expect you to uphold your oath.
Absolutely. That's the accountability that is part of the democratic process. precisely the case. As we not only vote in 4 years again, but as we vote in 2 years relative to the Senate and the House, and as we're involved in the political process every single day. One of the points that I often encourage people to consider at this point is that your elected officials need to hear from you, not just every 4 years or every 2 years. I've known a number of people in public service over the years, and they tell me that typical citizens have no idea how much influence they have with an email, with a letter, with a call to their congressman. They assume for every person that reaches out, there are hundreds, thousands that have that same position that didn't. It's like the restaurant industry, that if they get a complaint from a customer, they multiply it by 20. Of how many people would have the same concern but just didn't say so. They just never came back to the restaurant. Well, it's that idea. You can influence your president. You can influence the elected officials in this country in ways you may not understand if you'll stay engaged.
Well, again, you've had the benefit, as in hindsight, looking back to March. Here we are at the very beginning of December. It doesn't look like things are going to radically change. I mean, obviously, if there's a transition of government, that's going to result in a radical change. Do you anticipate, and I'm going to tap into you sitting on the board of a major medical institution, what do you anticipate happening in the next few months with a vaccine coming? Will it, in fact, change the horizon, the complexion of what's going to happen? I know it's unfair to ask you because you're not a prophet or the son of a prophet, but what do you anticipate might take place in the next 30, 60, 90 days?
That's certainly the hope. The hope is just from a medical perspective that we'll have what's called herd immunity by the summer, meaning that 70% of the populace has antibodies and on some level immunity to SARS-CoV-2 virus. That's certainly the goal, is by the summer that will be the case. The virus, the vaccines that are coming down, and there are three right now that are in the immediate future, and then there are others that are behind that as well, some of which are not nearly as difficult to transmit, and some of which are only one shot as opposed to two. So there are about 10 actually in the pipeline that could be relevant to this conversation.
Now, and
that's
certainly
the goal.
And if you had a conversation about those vaccines that you would consider ethically compromised or uncompromised, and I'm talking specifically about the planning and production using aborted fetal tissue.
It's a great question. I'm writing an article on that right now.
Oh, great.
This week. But yeah, the leading two vaccines, as I understand them, did not use aborted fetal tissue.
So they're not ethically, what we'd call ethically compromised. So that's not even going to be an issue that we have to struggle with.
That's my understanding. I'm going to do more research on that by next week, but that's to this point what I'm understanding is the case with the lead two. And I'm not aware of any in the pipeline that so far are themselves directly using aborted fetal material, though some may have used aborted fetal material in some of the experimentation process, but I'm not clear on that.
Wow.
But the ones that are right now in the conversation, as I understand it, did not use aborted fetal material.
Well, one of the things that you do at the Daily Article, at least after you talk about these logical options, you talk about some great difficulties that the early Christians faced in an empire that was not just indifferent or apathetic to Christians, it was actually hostile to Christians. But even in that hostile circumstance, you talk about how God's word calls us to seek justice and correct oppression.
And that was the goal then, and that should be the goal now. When I take people to Italy and Rome, when we do these biblical study tours, we always go to Trefontaine, which is a church built at the place where it traditionally was the execution site for the Apostle Paul. And the story is that when he was beheaded, his head bounced three times, and three fountains spurted up, and that's why the three fountains are there in that church. And so anyway, and we also go to the Mamertine dungeon, which was almost without question where he was imprisoned before he was executed. So here's Paul, who's facing one of the most horrendously immoral administrations in the history of the Roman Empire, nonetheless writing Romans 13 and writing 1 Timothy 2 and calling for us to pray for those in leadership and to support them as long as we can do so under the authority of the Lord Jesus. If they could, we can.
Thanks so much, Jim Dennison. As always, you're a gift to the body of Christ. Go to thedennisonforum.org. What does the Bible say about Santa Claus? But by all means, subscribe. It's free. Just enter your email. Subscribe. It's worth it. Thanks so much, Jim.
Gino, thanks so much. So grateful for you. God bless.
A lot going on this afternoon. Down south, backed up on northbound I-25. That's starting to get better. The crash northbound I-25 just past Castle Pines Parkway. Quite off to the right shoulder. Jams there about a mile and a half. Delays out west, that is police activity on eastbound I-70 at Kipling. Slow back toward 32nd Youngfield. Construction work backing up southbound Santa Fe approaching Dartmouth. And a tough drive up north, 136th Avenue shut down at Huron. That is just west of I-25. I'm Susan Thielen.
This report is sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance, where you only pay for what you need.
94.7 FM, The Word.
When life gets tough and your circumstances look bleak, where do you find security? When your skills, relationships, and willpower don't seem to be enough, what do you have to hold on to? Wednesday on Brave, Jeff Swarzentrop says that followers of Christ can put their faith in this unfailing promise. Discover the blessings for the believer. Wednesday on Brave with Jeff Swarzentrop.
Weekday mornings at 6 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. and weeknights at 7 p.m. on Denver's 94.7 FM, The Word.
This is Willie Dan with Stanford Funding. Rates have never been lower. Take advantage of these historic rates in the low to mid twos before they are gone forever. Call Stanford Funding now at 303-458-8200. With uncertainty in our economy and even our health, why not treat yourself to something positive for 2020? So come out of quarantine and call Stanford Funding now at 303-458-8200 and start saving. At Stanford Funding, you have rates in the low twos for 15-year fixed loan and mid twos for 30-year fixed loan. So whether you're looking to refinance or purchase a home, call 303-458-8200 before these rates are gone forever. At Stanford Funding, we are the complete package you're looking for. Low rates, great service, and fast closing. Stanford Funding has been serving the Colorado area for the last 20 years. So call now at 303-458-8200 or apply online at stanfordfunding.com.
NMLS 389087. Loan amount 100,000 to 3 million. Credit score 620 or higher.
Election fraud, radical abortion rights, open borders, riots in our streets, and regime changes in other nations. Meet George Soros, an atheist and one of the most dangerously influential people in America, pouring millions of dollars into the leftist agenda, instigating society's demoralization to control a free people and destroy the foundations of Christianity and our constitutional order. Watch the new film, Billionaire Radical, George Soros and the Scheme to Remake America, online at salemnow.com. See the movie that George Soros and the far left don't want you to see. Learn the truth and prepare to be shocked. Billionaire Radical, George Soros and the Scheme to Remake America, online at salemnow.com for just $9.99 or buy the DVD for just $12.99.
Go to salemnow.com and get 20% off with the promo code DEN. That's salemnow.com, promo code DEN.
My name is Pastor Josh Weidman from Grace Chapel. My heart for you as a pastor is that you'll grow to know Christ and see his work in your life every day. I think there are several steps that can aid this in your life. First, keep close to Christ through the constant consuming of Scripture. Second, be connected to a local church. We'd love to connect you to our church, Grace Chapel. We're located in South Denver, right off I-25 and C-470. We have live services on our campus and online every Sunday morning. We also have many online and in-person communities that you can be a part of. So if you're in Denver or the surrounding area and you don't have a local church, please check us out. You can find out more about us at gracechapel.org. And finally, keep consuming theological material that points your heart and mind to Christ. We have more for you on our website. So come on over, gospeldaily.org. That's GospelDaily.org.
Listen to Gospel Daily Monday through Friday right here on 94.7 FM, The Word.
Now, back to Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
If you're still alive and breathing, praise the Lord. Let everything...
Hey, welcome back. It was great hearing from Dr. Jim Dennison. And this, of course, on our weekly news Wednesday, love being able to catch you up with what's going on in this great big world. 303-873-1935. That's the number. If you want to join me on the program, happy to take your call. Again, it's 303-873-1935. Friendly Mark will pick up the phone. He'll ask you what your question is. We'll make every effort to get your question on the program. And like I said, we can take your calls on your questions about the Bible. We can take your calls on questions about the past or the future. Yesterday, I did a little bit of a reading, and I know I went very quickly yesterday on 50 signs of the end times. And I know we got a little bit of feedback on that, that was something very, very interesting. Happy to tell you where I got it and how you can get it as well. There are some interesting headlines at ChristianHeadlines.com. Mark Howington, and one of the headlines is this tragic one. It seems crazy for me to even say it out loud. This is the headline. Thomas Jefferson's name removed from an elementary school so students can feel safe.
So I'm assuming, therefore, that somehow they felt unsafe?
You know what? This is political correctness. This is intersectionality and critical race theory gone amok. Here, Thomas Jefferson, former governor and president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson from Virginia. A Virginia public school no longer bear the name of Thomas Jefferson after the school board voted unanimously yesterday to remove his name after a six-month study. The vote by the Falls Church School Board means that Thomas Jefferson Elementary School, George Mason High School, will be renamed. The reason? The two men owned slaves. Now, if you remove the name of every single human being who owned slaves, you know what would make an interesting article, Mark Howington? How many people who owned slaves? People don't realize that, Muhammad owned slaves. Did you know that? Did you know that Socrates owned slaves? If you go down the list of people who owned slaves and you decided that under no circumstance then can we acknowledge them, Augustus Caesar owned slaves. Julius Caesar owned slaves. I'm trying to think of other famous people that you would know. Claudius, the emperor, owned slaves. Obviously, the list is fairly high as we go down the list. But as you go through history, John Hancock owned slaves. Yes, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. James Madison owned slaves. Nero owned slaves. John Newton owned slaves, but then he gave them up, got saved, changed his life, wrote the Amazing Grace. Can you imagine, Mark Howington, can you imagine we will never sing Amazing Grace ever again because at one point John Newton owned slaves? Cleopatra owned slaves. Most of the Ptolemies in Egypt owned slaves. The artist John Ruskin owned slaves. Now, again, I'm not advocating supporting slavery. What I am wondering is there more to this story? It's true that Thomas Jefferson called slavery a moral depravity and a hideous blot, but he still owned them at his Monticello home. George Mason, too, owned slaves, although he called the slave trade disgraceful to mankind and said it should not be protected by the United States Constitution. In this article, it says, quote, the board took seriously the viewpoints and concerns raised by students, parents, staff, and community members. We thank everyone who shared their perspectives with us, and we will be mindful of your comments. Of course, I'm wondering how many people said, no, it's ridiculous that you would change the name of an elementary school because Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. I'm wondering what's next. I'm wondering if Thomas Jefferson's depiction on Mount Rushmore means that we're going to have to chisel away his image. And I wonder if every single person in America is going to throw away all of their nickels because Thomas Jefferson's image is on that coin. A survey conducted by the school board showed that a majority of the parents and community members wanted the schools to keep their names. I want you to just think about, let that sink in for just a moment. A survey conducted by the school board showed that a majority of parents and their community members wanted the school to keep their names, and the students were more divided. A plurality of staff members also supported the current names. And of course, the move was widely criticized in social media. Guy Benson with Fox News, a Fox News radio host, said, quote, "These adults have determined that it's too unsafe for young students to attend a school named after the author of the Declaration of Independence." How do you even go there? Another tweeted sarcastically, "I wonder if the cafeteria will allow Caesar salads." You know why? Because Caesar also had slaves. The estimated cost to rename George Mason High School and Thomas Jefferson Elementary School is $96,760 and $13,500 respectively. But hey, the sky's the limit if somebody else is paying the bill. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. And a couple of other news items that we should keep in mind as we're thinking about what's going on in the popular culture. Another article that's posted at ChristianHeadlines.com, Michigan Attorney General says being wished a Merry Christmas devastated her son, her words. Michigan Attorney General Dana Mizzle of Michigan tweeted her concern over President Trump's use of Merry Christmas this weekend, according to CBN News. While campaigning in Georgia in an attempt to secure Republican senator seats, the president told the crowd, "Let me begin by wishing you all a very Merry Christmas." Remember that word? Remember we started 5 years ago and said you're going to be saying Christmas again and say it proudly again, although they'll be trying to take the word again out of the vocabulary. We're not going to let them do that. And of course, the attorney general told her Twitter followers, "I remember the first time I was at a store with my son and an employee said, Merry Christmas. My son looked devastated." Merry Christmas, upending people's worldviews. Wow. 303-873-1935. I'll be back.
When crashing the drive down south, northbound I-25, just past Castle Pines Parkway, exit 188, clear off to the right shoulder, backs up there about a mile and a half. Traveling in the metro area, slowdowns along the interstates. There's police activity out west causing a backup eastbound 70 at Kipling. I'm Susan Thielen.
Psst. Hey, you. Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance, so you only pay for what you need.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
94.7 FM, The Word.
94.7 FM, The Word, is helping you survive the holidays with our grab-and-go dining directory. Treat yourself to a great meal from one of the area's finest restaurants. Just go to 94.7FMTheWord.com to view our list of fabulous local eateries that are open and ready to serve great takeout or delicious delivery. The grab-and-go dining directory. Less stress, more yum. Find it online at 94.7FMTheWord.com. And don't forget to show your appreciation this holiday season with a generous tip for the workers who are going above and beyond to serve you. Thanks.
This is Hugh Hewitt for townhall.com. Operation Warp Speed, the Trump administration's aggressive program pushing for a vaccine for COVID-19, is on the cusp of success. We know the vaccines work and without serious side effects. Now, everyone's got to get it. We need 70 to 80% of America vaccinated to have herd immunity in the country. Operation Warp Speed is a triumph of science and logistics without parallel. It may be the greatest achievement of the Trump administration. President Trump gets credit for the Abraham Accords, which have changed the face of the Middle East. He gets credit for the American awakening to the threat from the Chinese Communist Party. He gets credit for 3 Supreme Court justices and 54 appeals court judges. He gets credit for the greatest economic recovery in history, and he gets credit for massive deregulation. But Operation Warp Speed is probably Trump's greatest achievement. It's reasonable to hope and believe that by March we'll be at herd immunity in the United States. It's great news for a pandemic-weary nation and world. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
Parents, let's be honest. Many high school and college-age kids seem to have little direction these days. That might be true for your son or daughter. They spend a lot of time gaming, hanging with friends, but nothing seems to lead them on a path to adulthood. You may want them to go to a 4-year university, but their grades just don't warrant it. Their lack of passion and direction makes you wonder if a 4-year university would even be a wise investment. Here's a better route to consider. The Full Stack Software Development Program from Steve Wozniak. Available through SalemCareerHub.com. They'll learn real-life work skills that are marketable and in high demand right now. And at SalemCareerHub.com, you can sign up for these courses at 50% off their regular price. Talk it over with your kids and get them out of the basement. They're probably as anxious as you are to move forward and just need a little push. The place to start? SalemCareerHub.com. You can also call 866-711-6275. 866-711-6275. Or SalemCareerHub.com.
Hello, this is Christine, General Manager of Beauvisage Skincare and Spa. Guys, the holidays have arrived, and without question, this was a very difficult year, particularly for that special woman in your life. Now it's time for her to get out, have fun, and relax. So this holiday, please buy her a few hours of pampering from Beauvisage. We specialize in luxurious services like soothing massages, wonderful European facials, and much more. And I promise you, we do a great job at very competitive prices. Also, there are many people who've had a tough year financially. That's why we have several gift packages to choose from with prices to meet anyone's budget. For details, call 303-779-5002 or go to bvspa.com. This holiday, help relieve her stress. Call Beauvisage, 303-779-5002 or bvspa.com.
Denver's 94.7 FM, The Word. Listen live at radio.com.
Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program. The number's 303-873-1935. Let's see who's up. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gino. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Well, I have a very interesting topic that I would like to talk to you about today. And before I tell you about it, I have just a little bit of a backstory to kind of tell you what this topic, what the topic is. Many years ago, I heard a CD recording from a friend of mine. And it was recorded by a guy by the name of Paul Barnes. I don't know if you've heard of him or not.
There's a local person named Paul Barnes who is a pastor of a local church.
Okay, well, this Paul Barnes is a Greek Orthodox. And he is a classical pianist himself, and he's actually very good. And this CD is a lecture that he gave back in 1996 in Nebraska. And this lecture is actually based on a piece of music, and one, it's one of the greatest masterpieces for solo piano. It's a piece by the Hungarian composer Franz Liszt, and it's the Sonata in B minor. And this sonata is like 30 minutes long. I mean, that's a huge piece of music. it's great, though.
And, yeah, I am somewhat familiar with that, you know, the Faustian legend. I'm not, you know, I can't say I am well-versed on the subject, but I am somewhat familiar with the Faustian legend, so.
Okay.
Well, now, is this the Paul Barnes who was the senior pastor of a local evangelical church, Grace Chapel, and he resigned from his pulpit because of issues of sexual integrity and then became a Greek Orthodox person?
I don't know. I'm not so sure.
Okay. I was wondering. Yeah, I just want to make – I don't want to confuse him with that Paul Barnes, but keep going.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, so – In this lecture is actually very, very long, so I can't go into all the details. But one of the something that really was interesting that Paul Barnes pointed out a lot in this lecture were various symbols. What he called symbolisms, and one of them was the cross motive. And so basically what he did was he talked about the cross motive, and that was, you know, Jesus, you know, he died on the cross for us. And basically he played the theme from the Liszt sonata that was the cross motive itself. And this theme occurs like in all these major keys of the piece throughout the piece at various points. And so he, you know, he did D major, you know, it was really, it's actually quite interesting.
Hmm.
I don't know if you wanted to hear what I'm talking about to give you a better idea or what.
Well, maybe I can listen to it at some time, but I obviously don't have 30 minutes right now to listen to it.
But anyway.
Because we're doing the radio program.
Well, I was just going to play that theme for you.
You were going to play...
What he called the cross motive theme.
And how long does it last?
Oh, it's like maybe 10 seconds.
10 seconds I can do.
All right. Yeah. So basically this is what Paul Barnes referred to as the cross motive. So on. So that's that theme there. And so it comes in all these grand keys, like you just heard, that's D major. It's, you know, it's very bold, it's big, it's massive. And so it's really interesting to hear somebody talk about this piece like that from a spiritual aspect. And I was just wondering if you've heard of anything like this.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. There's lots of music that as a man, dare I use the word, a manifestation of a spiritual undertone. Now the piece that you're making reference to has classically been interpreted, not in the way that you just discussed, not as a crossroads. The crossroads is a Faustian crossroads, making a pact with the devil. And that's exchanging your soul for unlimited knowledge and worldly pleasures. So again, I'm a little bit confused because...
I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry to confuse you.
No. I mean, it's not... Again, you know how music is. I mean, just because... The piano sonata by Liszt has been traditionally interpreted as a musical portrait of the Faust legend. The crossroads isn't a crossroads of Christ. It is a crossroads of conflict where a person is trying to make a bargain with the devil. Now, in my generation, there was another very famous musician named Eric Clapton and Cream, and he wrote a song called I Went Down to the Crossroads. Mm-hmm. To try to plug a ride. But again, it's a Faustian musical that is about a person who's at a crossroads in their life getting ready to make a deal with the devil. So that was my confusion over what you were saying, because, again, I'm not a musical scholar by any stretch of the imagination, mm-hmm. but the Liszt Sonata has classically been interpreted a couple of different ways, but the primary way is the Faustian legend. Another people have talked about it being it's about the divine and the diabolical, based on the Bible and John Milton's Paradise Lost. So the music itself, as you know, like a portrait, if you will, but music is way more fluid than even a visual portrait. This is one of the genius of music. Imagine no one has any understanding. They're just listening to it, okay? And then you're asked, hey, tell me what you think about what you're listening. It's almost like a Rorschach test, where the music can literally evoke all kinds of different meanings.
Yes, and you know, it's very interesting that you mentioned the word diabolical. That was another thing that Paul Barnes said, that in the beginning of the Liszt Sonata, it's almost a very diabolical, almost, there's like no, the scale, there's no major, minor scale. It's sort of like, okay, what's he doing? What's going on, you know?
Well, but just think about what you just said, because most human beings who have no understanding of music whatsoever, when you hear music played, you can tell which note is the sour note, the discordant note, the note that doesn't belong. And so imagine you put that kind of note in there purposely, mm-hmm. because you're trying to evoke a sentiment or an emotion. Yeah. But yeah, you're it's fascinating. But hey, thanks for calling. This is not something I get all the time. I have to admit, you're the first person who's called with Liszt Sonata and asked me to think about it.
Yes, well, I really wanted to share it with you, because I just found it to be very interesting, because this is a piece I've actually known for many years, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, thank you. It prompts me to want to re-listen to the whole thing. Hey, I got to go, but thank you so much for calling. 303-873-1935. I'll be back.
Four seven FM, The Word.